Good evening. This is Susan Gingrich, the herb lady from Ohio, and we have Thomas Easley from Alabama on with us tonight. And tonight's topic, you want to say hello, Thomas, first, and then I'll tell you what we're doing.
Hello, Susan. Hello, everybody.
There, now we got a voice level on both of us. Now, what we're going to talk about tonight is health freedom in Ohio. We've just been through all kinds of crazy stuff, and I've sort of managed to be in a position to do some lobbying in the state legislature. And please don't go away. This is really important stuff. So I want to explain some of the ramifications of certain laws that are coming up and what we've been going through here in Ohio and what you can do in your state. And if you happen to live in Ohio, I'm going to tell you exactly what to do here. First of all, there are six states in this country that have health freedom laws. And first of all, the first one to establish one is Oklahoma. They have so many Indian tribes in Oklahoma that early in the 1900s, they declared that the medical boards were on one side of the page and the non-medical boards, or the alternative and complementary care, were on the other side of the page, and they were not to be messed with by the medical boards. And they've lived happily ever after with that. They seem to get along very well, and there are many alternative schools in Oklahoma, and they just simply coexist. I was intrigued when I was in Australia about how alternative, what we would consider alternative, and they consider more mainstream, existed side by side with regular medical stuff. I remember Allie, when we were over there, broke a toe, and we had to find an X-ray to see, you know, exactly how far we had to go with this little black toe that she had. And the X-ray only cost us $30. Now, it's true it was 6 years ago, but it's astounded me how inexpensive that was. And we had to look for a, quote, real doctor. I knew where there was an iridologist because there was a store just two blocks from where we were staying that had an iridology advertisement in the window, but it was harder for us to find, quote, the real thing, right? But it's interesting how different political states will create a climate where things can grow or not grow, just like in a garden. So in Ohio, what we have is the most restrictive dietitian's law in the whole country, and it was put into effect in the late 1980s. So we've been living with this thing, and let me explain something that Diane Miller explained to us. She said that when the medical people came into the states in the early 1900s, they declared that they owned all healing. Okay, this is the doctor's right to practice, and they own all healing, and particularly prescription drugs and surgery. So the nurses who were working alongside the doctors noticed that they were doing some healing things and that they should probably get themselves an exemption to that right to practice medicine. So an exemption to a medical board is a box that contains certain activities and practices that group is allowed to do. And when you have created a box like that, you declare that no one else is allowed to do that but you. So part of the boxing in of exemptions to the medical board practices means that there will be a board overseeing your testing, your licensure, and also making sure that nobody else touches your turf. Okay? Then we had physician's assistants come along and get their little box. And then the osteopaths and the chiropractors got a box. And in Ohio, they went on and declared a dietitian's board, which has been the bane of our existence ever since, and also a massage therapy board. Now, if you live in a state that does not have these things, please fight them tooth and nail. Because what has happened in Ohio is that the dietitians claimed nutrition and healing, and no one else is allowed to use those two words in the same sentence except a dietitian. So I cannot openly advertise nutritional counseling. And legally, I cannot tell a diabetic not to eat sugar. The massage therapist in this state cannot tell a person to drink water after the massage. What a lot of my friends tend to do is hand people a bottle of water and just say, would you like some water? Because after massage, you really need to cleanse and, you know, use a lot of water or you'll be very sore. But they can't tell their clients that because, according to the medical board, that would be prescribing. Now, I have, over the years, been listening to various people say, well, how come it is that I went to massage school and the textbook that we have was written by an MD, not by a massage therapist? And that's because the massage therapy board is an exemption from the medicine law, the right to practice medicine law. And so the MD rules all those exempted boards. And they get to say what happens within those boards. And that's why the massage therapist test is a killer. Most people, it takes them 5 or 6 times to pass the thing. And that's a way for the medical boards to control, quote, the quality. But it also keeps too many massage therapists from existing. See, it kind of raises the standards to an intellectual quality. And what's sad is you have people who are naturally very good at just finding the hurt and rubbing it away, but they have to pass this medical board exam before they're allowed to apply their thumbs to your back in Ohio. Okay, so we've gone the route of over licensure here. Now, there's a person on the board, the dietitian's board in Ohio, who makes it a point to harass approximately 700 people per year for what she calls practicing dietetics without a license. And this includes a woman who I know from north of Columbus, who has just recently got a registered nurse's license. She's got a master's degree in nursing that is in nutrition. And she was called on the carpet by the dietitians. She's not even allowed to talk about what to eat with her clients because she doesn't have the dietitian's license. Okay, so what it boils down to is a turf war, and we don't want to play that anymore. So one of the people who was attacked by the dietetics board, and there are 30 or so on average per year ever since this law came into existence, who actually go to court. And I had dinner with one last night who spent $18,000 out of pocket defending herself against the dietetics board. Her sin was that she had used the title naturopathic doctor in a lecture that she gave at her own clinic. Now, that was because she had accomplished whatever it takes to go through a course in naturopathy. But ND in the state of Ohio is initials that are owned by the... Okay, we're back on. Okay, I don't know what happened there, but here we are. Okay, so anyway, the dietetics board in Ohio has been a very difficult beast to deal with. Now, in Minnesota, I have to tell you what happened there. There was a farmer who was selling colostrum to people who wanted to boost their immune system. Colostrum is the first milk after a calf is born. In human milk, we do have colostrum as well, too, in the first milk that comes, and that gives the baby an immune system because it provides antibodies. And this farmer was selling colostrum to people. And in the middle of the night one night, in came the black helicopters, the FBI, the FDA. They all came in and arrested the man for practicing medicine without a license. One of his clients, named Diane Miller, is a lawyer, and she defended him in court. And they ended up with a hung jury because the jury was being asked to find him guilty and put him in jail for practicing medicine without a license when he was a farmer selling milk, and they refused to convict a farmer of selling milk. They just said, this is ridiculous. We're not going to do this. So if you're ever a jury member, remember that you can do that. Just say, not ruling on it. It's not a law that I can rule on. So then Diane went on to the Minnesota legislature, and she got the Minnesota Health Freedom Bill passed a few years ago. She's a very amazing legal mind. She puts words very concisely down on paper, and what she thought through and developed and finally got passed is what she calls an exemption bill, which is an exemption for anyone else who's helping anyone and doing no harm cannot be prosecuted. All right, so her intention here was that no one else would ever be prosecuted for helping someone if no harm is shown. Now, if harm or intent to harm is shown, of course they can be prosecuted under laws that exist. She answered the question that the legislators all have of how do we protect the public. Instead of going a registration route, which is the way the Ohio legislature wants to go, or so they seem, I mean, they think of that first, she provided in the bill, and this is similar in the one that we're introducing or trying to introduce in Ohio, she provided in that bill a disclosure where you as a person offering services ask the person to read your credentials and what you can expect from your modality, meaning if I'm giving you herbs, what could you expect from herbs? If I'm using iridology, what can you expect from that? If I'm using acupuncture, what kinds of things can you expect as a result? And then there's also a list of prohibited activities, like surgery, prescribing drugs, who would want to, you know, setting a bone, delivering a baby, things that we want to leave to the doctors, to the emergency room, and so forth. And you read that list of things I'm not allowed to do and what I'm capable of or what I have studied, and then you sign a paper saying you've read that. I keep it on file, and you are now an educated consumer. That's all the protection that we really want for the consumer. And that guarantees an educated public, because once that law is passed, people like me can come out and advertise my services. I'm not afraid of the witch hunt that's going on constantly for those weirdos that are out there. Okay, so that's all we want in a health freedom bill, just that. Now, when you start to step in with registration, what they've introduced in Ohio, they first introduced a very good bill at the beginning of 2005, and 9 months after they did it, they negotiated in registration, which is that you would go to the state and you would pay $50, and they would give you the right to talk to clients, or in other words, you buy back your freedom of speech, which if you're a strict constitutionalist, begins to put you in a tailspin. Can't do this. And I went to the legislature. We organized a crew here in the fall of last year to defeat the bill that had added registration. And within a week, we had 15,000 letters in our state house, and we talked to the entire committee that was looking at the bill, and we kept it from coming to a vote. So we thought we had it defeated. Our next challenge was to bring in a good health freedom bill again and try to get it put into place. So as we were looking for a sponsor, it was we found out that someone had already reintroduced a registration bill. It was even worse this time because it's straight registration with no health freedom language. But the title of it is Consumer Health Freedom for Ohio. So it's sort of like a wolf in sheep's clothing, or as my husband describes it, a Christmas present with a bomb inside. You know, it says the right words on the front, but it is not that at all. So anyway, what I've been getting to do here in the last few weeks is to go up to the State House and talk to the committee that is considering the bill. And just this week, we're looking at a way to substitute our bill in for 148. And if any of you are from Ohio, we're still not supporting 148, but we are in discussion to replace the bill with ours. So keep in touch with our website. It's ohiosunshinehealthfreedom.info is the website. You go on there, and that'll keep you posted on a minute-by-minute basis. But we're actually looking at replacing that with our bill. So at any moment, we could become in favor of it if they do switch it out. But for now, until we hear, we're still against the registration bill. We're for health freedom. But that's not it. So what's wrong with registration, anyway? The original intent of the bill is that no one else should ever be prosecuted for helping another person without harm being shown. And that's working great in Minnesota. In fact, in the bill, the legislators were afraid there'd be lots of complaints, so they set up an oversight board that would take complaints. And they had something like 3 calls in 2 or 3 years. There was some discussion about unplugging the phone and sending the man home, but you know, as a government, they feel like they have to watch out for, you know, dangerous activities. But it says right in the bill, if it's a harmless activity, why are we prosecuting? You know, it's for harmless activities. Now, what does that cover? See, this is one of the things that I've had to deal with these legislators. They're assuming we're talking about naturopathic doctors, but there's more than that. There's Reiki. There's there's sound therapy, music therapy, color therapy, foot baths, all kinds of different modalities out there. And who knows what's being developed on a regular basis. we want to be able to cover them all. And in Ohio, we have a case right now of a raw milk dairy that was entrapped, literally, by a federal agency to give him some raw milk. And it's illegal in Ohio to sell raw milk. So he was entrapped, and there's a big court case about it. We think that under this law, if we could get the Health Freedom Bill passed in a good form, that we would have been able to protect that farmer under this law. So we're talking about anybody. And when you start trying to pin it down as to who should register, you know, which modalities have to and which don't, then you've got a gray area of people who are not registered. Also, in registration, what you're doing in 148, the way it's still written, is creating a new box under those medical boards that would still be ruled by the medical licensure people. So it would be a medical board for non-medical procedures, which would be like having your competition in charge of what you can and can't say on a commercial. Don't like that idea. I mean, that right in itself is not an even playing field. And who knows, even though now in the bill it wants a high school education, you've established that you have to have an education of some sort, some educational level. That leads to licensure. It leads to this medical board deciding, oh, no, now you're going to have a four-year degree in naturopathy before you can talk about capsicum to anybody. We don't want a bureaucratic unit to be able to say that to us. We would we prefer to just have a blanket, Diane calls it a safe harbor bill, that is an exemption for anyone doing no harm. That is the simplest way to cover anybody who is doing no harm, rather than get involved in defining the practice and testing for the practice and all the stuff that goes with that. The other part, intent of the bill is that the consumer be able to have an educated choice in whatever happens to them. I have a right to decide what I want done to my body. That's an inherent right. And no government agency can tell me whether I can and can't have Reiki done to me or whatever it is that I decide to try. That is not for government to choose before me. And what other place in our living does the government choose before we do as a consumer? Yeah, there are safety standards on, you know, foods and toys and so forth. But we've got the safety standards in the product. We don't need to worry about that. What we need to worry about is that they're educated and that we protect the right of the consumer to make a choice and to proceed to find help. I know in my own experience when I had the chronic fatigue, and I've talked about this on the show before, but I was on the couch for a couple of years, and I was committed to finding some way to get myself well, first of all. And then the second part of that became, why in the world won't anybody talk to me about what to do for myself? When I went to the doctor, I was told to take Valium. I never filled the prescription, although I got three of them I've collected. I didn't want to just mask the problems. I knew that there was more that I needed to learn. Well, I learned naturopathy because of that experience. But part of my commitment is that nobody else has to lie there on that couch in the same condition I was, with nobody willing to talk to them about what might work. And I was depressed and demoralized over the fact that the doctor thought it was in my head, that I was making up all this muscle pain that I had. And I was willing to do whatever anybody told me that would help. And I did quite a long series of things. And although chronic fatigue is considered incurable, and the first book I read of it said that I should be on welfare the rest of my life and to get used to that, I decided not to do it that way. But I had to use my own brain and my own persistence to find, first of all, the body of knowledge that would help me to get out of that, because it's not able to be advertised in Ohio. So by providing a health freedom bill that will allow the practitioners to come forward and be a little bit more exposed and visible, somebody falling onto the couch with chronic fatigue will be able to find the next practitioner more rapidly. That's my real commitment. It's really a consumer's health freedom bill. Okay, now, we also have an inherent right to help someone else. It goes against the American dream to require registration or permission from any government before acting to help. And if you were to create a box for the registration that becomes licensure, and you don't know 35 to 40 years down the road what bureaucrat is going to take hold of that, the object of that type of box, which is very similar to the dietitian's little box, is to control the people who are registered and make sure that they're up to snuff, but also to get rid of the people who are not doing that educational requirement or whatever it is. So you're creating a sentinel looking for people who aren't registered. Now, that big gray area of non-registered people might include somebody offering another person a Tic Tac at some point. A Tic Tac, it does, after all, have peppermint in it, which could be considered an herbal product, and it's all a matter of interpretation. And who should register? We have an entire county full of, several counties in Ohio full of Amish folks who don't even register to vote. They refuse to participate in politics. Now, if we require them to register before they start talking to one another, and I'm talking literally talking to other people about herbs or various remedies, we're talking about their lifestyle, that they would have to register with the state before they could do, making them criminal for following what they've been doing all along. And the cue for that criminality would be a healing act. What kind of a culture are we trying to cultivate when a healing act becomes a cue for the sheriff to step in? We have so many other crimes in Ohio to deal with. Why in the world would we create a group of people whose crime is helping someone else? See, that's where it begins to get totally insane. So what we're really seeking is a Safe Harbor Act, and this bill is supposed to be introduced into the Commerce and Labor Committee in the House within the next month. We're hoping to have it reversed and our bill be introduced instead of that. And we need people in Ohio to tell their legislators that we want health freedom, we do not want registration of unlicensed people. That's the gist of it, the essence of it. You can find who your legislators are by going on to ohio.gov. I think that's the way you get into the legislature thing. You can also go on our website, and it'll be able to tell you, or just call up the legislature and ask them who your legislators are. We need you to talk to your representative and to your senator, too. Once it comes out of committee, and I think this committee is committed to getting a good health freedom bill for us, because they know what we've gone through with the dietitians. Also, because of the massage therapy bill, no one else but massage therapists who are licensed are allowed to touch anybody for therapeutic reasons in Ohio. So people doing reflexology or doing Reiki healing are practicing illegally as well. So they need to be protected from that massage therapy board as well. Okay, so there are two very strong reasons why we need this. Okay, we've also noticed in Ohio that there's been a new committee developed for the House of Representatives called the Health Access and Affordability Committee. And they are seeking ways to make health care more affordable and more accessible to people. And one of the points that we're trying to make to the members of that committee is that if you pass a bill that requires registration for non-medical people, i.e. complementary and alternative health care, then you're going to raise the costs of medicine by doing that. And here's why. If I have to register and I have to be more careful about what I say and do with people because I'm registered, and that registration was supposed to be there to protect me, that's going to be reflected in the cost of my consultations. It's going to go up. I'm going to be more careful even than I am now about who I take on as a client. The price will go up. If we get the freedom bill that we want, my prices can stay the same. I'm not worried. In fact, I'm loosened up to be able to advertise more. So my costs will stay down. And I will be able to stay in practice. Now, I want to point out something. My bottle of omega-3 fish oil here that's a Nature Sunshine product costs around $16, $17, $18, somewhere in there. I can't even remember. I read recently that the pharmaceutical companies have gotten on to the fact that so many people are taking fish oil because they've read about it in the newspaper, they've heard about it on this show or, you know, other shows like it, and they've decided that they need to produce and provide fish oil for the prescription industry. So if you get a prescription for omega-3, the cost is around $117 for the same amount of fish oil, and that's through the doctor. So if you make the complementary and alternative healthcare people less accessible to the public, the costs of medicine are going to go up because the only place you can get it is by prescription from the doctor's office. I want to also point out that in the year 2000, Ohio passed a bill which made it okay for MDs to talk about complementary and alternative care techniques to their clients. So they can now talk to you about omega-3. They couldn't before the year 2000. I have no complaints about that. I'm glad that they are because that's a better product for people to have. But isn't it odd that we still are having a battle about the people who developed those techniques, who, from whom the doctors learned it, they're still not allowed to talk about what they can do. They have to be careful and about who they talk to, that they don't get in trouble with the dietetics board. So we want to even the playing field just a little bit that by you know, allowing us the idea, you know, the open communication. I spoke with a legislator about 5 o'clock yesterday. Everybody was getting pretty tired by then. But he came in the room and he said, well, why don't you just go to the already licensed boards for the health care that you want? And we all turned to him, and each one of us in the room had a different health care issue that the doctors had written off as being made up or in your head. One gentleman had mercury poisoning and has terrible knee joint problems because of that. My husband had had congestive heart failure and cancer, and we had gone the medical route as far as they could take us. But where they wanted Norman to go was a heart transplant, which would have put me in poverty for the rest of my life. And he said, no, we're not going to do that. And we started studying up on other things to do, and he's fine now. It only took 4 months to get his heart back to normal size and normal function. And most of the people that I talk to have already been told by the doctors to either go home and die or they're going to have to live with this for the rest of their life or it's only a matter of time until they're on dialysis. So they've already been given everything that modern medicine has before they get to this explore, in other words, of what to do instead. So we answered that question that way. And then he said, well, wouldn't you want the credibility involved with a licensure? And one of my colleagues said, credibility and licensure have nothing to do with each other. I'm credible because people know that what I give them works. I've got 30 years of experience, and I've got people finding their way to my house out in farm country. And I do not advertise because she said I have too many clients. I don't need to do that. It's all word of mouth. I'm not going out and dragging them in and trying to sell them a snake oil. They are finding me, she said. My credibility has nothing to do with your licensure. And, see, that's something that has happened over time, that licensure has become equated with credibility. Now, at that point, I told the legislator the story about the original licensure. King Henry VIII, back in 1512, there's a very flowery edict that came down from his governing body, and it states that he's sick and tired of the physicians coming into London, cutting people up and leaving them in worse shape than they were when they started, and costing way too much, and their refusal to serve the poor, and furthermore, they were suing the herbalists, and he was sick and tired of that, and the herbalists actually do help the poor. So they are no longer allowed to do that. And he said, and furthermore, anyone practicing or wanting to practice a physician or surgeon within a 7-mile radius of London have to go before a board, go before the bishop, take a test, and become licensed. So the original licensure was about what was considered a dangerous practice. And I've heard Diane Miller say that licensure is for professions that would be illegal if you weren't licensed. And that's the original intent of licensure. And if you think about it, if you spread a friend out on a table and started cutting him open with a knife, that would be very illegal unless you had a license to do so, and that's called surgery. So sure, we'll let the surgeons be licensed. They're a dangerous profession otherwise. But if there's no harm done and no intent of harm, why should you license people like herbalists? the danger, and of course this is the thing I've been noticing with the legislators, there's an assumption that naturopathic people are shysters and dangerous under the surface. I keep showing them a study that was done. The information came from the Journal of the American Medical Association over the time period from 1983 to 1993. It shows that in that time period there were 110,000 deaths per year due to prescription drugs. There were approximately 9,000 from foodborne illnesses. I think it was 300, no, that was from over-the-counter drugs. And then there were 360 deaths per year on average from food poisoning. There were 3 total for all supplements in that time period, and that was the tainted tryptophan that came from Japan one time. 0 deaths from all herbs in that time period. And, of course, I was walking in the hall yesterday with one of the legislators, and he said, but what about the ephedra issue? Ephedra is terribly dangerous. And I had to say the deaths that were cited for the ephedra issue were trumped up. There was one that the person took ephedrine. Most of these were ephedrine deaths, which is cough syrup. It's the imitation of ephedra. It's not the real natural product. Ephedrine. Someone had taken ephedrine. They got in a car and hit a tree, and that was considered an ephedra death. And they are supposed to have had 34 of those. They were all really, really dug up. I mean, they were not something that was an obvious ephedra death, and that's being taken to court again. But there's a constant effort on the part of the pharmaceutical industry to make the herbs seem more dangerous than they ever would be or are. And, of course, we're not talking about just herbalism and naturopathy in this bill. We're talking about anybody doing anything to help. Creation of a registration situation that's mandatory would create a fear of speaking up in public. You'd have a fear of sharing an article with a friend, especially if you knew that they had cancer, because then you could be crossing the line. There's a large industry too of networking for supplements. I think of Shaklee and Avon selling supplements now. There's Amway, Nature Sunshine, a huge industry. And the reason that those products sell better in network marketing is because of this kind of ban on speaking up and advertising about these things, for one thing. And if you had registration, that means that if you signed up to sell one of those products, you'd have to register first, before you could even talk about goji juice or, you know, the benefits that you got from taking extra magnesium, for example. You know, you couldn't say to your friend, wow, my muscle cramps went away when I took that. There's no drug out there that will do that. Well, of course not, because the muscle needed magnesium before it could work, okay? Are you still there, Thomas? Okay, I don't know whether anybody's hearing me. Okay. Okay, 10:36. Let's see. Harmless acts. Another point that I've been making with the legislators is that two wrongs don't make a right. They're trying to correct the situation that they created by forming a dietetics board by making yet another board. And that would be like saying, okay, we realize that we've been prejudiced against you black people, so now you're going to all register and we can find you and take care of that. Wrong. Now, the question comes up with some folks who are practicing naturopathy who want to call themselves a doctor. And to do that, you'd have to pass a test and get a licensure and all that sort of thing. But as Diane has said many times, the foundation needs to be laid first with a good health freedom bill in your state before you want to start defining a certain practice. And then you have to write that law very carefully so that you don't exclude other people from being able to do the same thing. Because with naturopathy and this type of alternative complementary care, a lot of it is just good common sense. It's just plain common sense that everybody ought to know about. And if everybody did know even a small bit, if you just came and attended 1-hour-long meeting with me, you'd know enough to perhaps prevent the next emergency room visit. And you all know how much those can cost. The last time I took anybody in my family to the emergency room, the bill was $1,000. And that's why our health care costs are so high. And if you started learning some of these common sense things and started implanting them into families, they would be less in need of so many doctor visits and emergency room visits. I actually had a cousin who works it's a helicopter emergency room here in Ohio, and she said to me one time, I just wish people would take care of their own splinters and earaches and sore throats. You know, they keep coming to the emergency room with those things, and it takes the time away from us dealing with scraping people up off the road. Let's leave the emergencies, you know, let's leave the emergency room to the emergencies. Too many people are treating them as a frontline doctor visit when they could be taking care of those things at home and easily with just a little bit of knowledge. Here are some reasons why the National Health Freedom Group does not support registration. And it says right here, the NHFA opposes registration of any unlicensed health care provider who is not causing an imminent and discernible risk of significant direct harm to the public and who is not holding themselves out as a licensed health care provider or who is not being fraudulent. Now, the reasons they do that is for the following reasons. Okay, number one, many healing and health care practices are a normal and necessary part of social behavior and are inherent rights and are not dangerous and should not be considered privileges to be doled out by a government. The concept of healing as a right of all people should be preserved. Think about the last time your child bumped a knee. You grab it, you squeeze it, you hold it tight, you rub it, okay? What if even that became considered something that should be doled out by the government? Once you've created that box, you don't know how far they'll take it, see? Mandating signing up with the government before a person does an act of healing takes healing in its entirety out of the public domain and puts it under a mandate of police power for no other reason than it is a healing act. That's a powerful statement. It takes healing in its entirety out of the public domain and puts it under a mandate of police power for no reason other than it is a healing act. The third reason, registration of all health care and healing is an unwarranted use of police power, suggesting that the occupation of healing in and of itself is not a right and has inherent significant risk to the public, requiring a privilege without a showing of harm or fraud triggering the need for police power. And you see, that's what we're living with in Ohio right now. All we have to do is advertise nutritional counseling, and they're all over us. No harm was done. And if we had registration, you would lose the power to go to court and say, but sir, no one was hurt. Why are we here? You didn't register. That becomes the offense. That's what I'm afraid of. This is our human rights here. The National Health Freedom Action believes that health care choice is a fundamental right, and laws regulating health care practitioners directly impact that right and should always be held to a constitutional strict scrutiny standard, which includes a showing of compelling state interest and least restrictive means of regulation. And registration is not the least restrictive means of regulation. Now, we have a list of these on our website. It's the Ohio Sunshine Health Freedom Coalition.info. You can find this right there. And also the National Health Freedom Action has a website as well where these are available to you. Another reason, there is no compelling state interest to warrant registration of all people that do healing acts. Therefore, it does not meet the constitutional threshold of a compelling government interest. Another reason, there are less restrictive means of accomplishing the goals of the state. Therefore, registration requirements do not meet the constitutional threshold of least restrictive means possible of legislation. Meeting constitutional muster for laws is a worthy goal of all Americans. I'd want to point out again that if you want to become a doctor as a naturopathic doctor, that needs to be a voluntary registration. What we're talking about here is mandatory registration, and y'all ought to know who needs it. See, that's the scary part, and that just keeps creeping outward. Mandatory registration or permit requirements negatively impact consumers' access. The consumer will lose legal access to healing practitioners who do not sign up and pay fees, and the cost to consumers increase because government expends funds and practitioners pass on the fees to the clients. This is well documented. There's a negative impact on practitioners that includes practitioners must sign up with the government and pay a fee before doing a healing act. Practitioners find themselves under the jurisdiction of an agency where there are future risks of additional regulation through rulemaking, such as random inspections or mandatory education. There is the risk that a permit type of registration can be converted to an occupational registration law that includes mandatory education and standards of care, or converted to an exclusive professional licensing law. Don't want that. Misuse of the title registered by practitioners who function under a permit type registration to establish credibility can cause misrepresentation to consumers. Remember I told you that the legislator yesterday said, well, don't you want the credibility that the licensure would give you? We don't want to confuse credibility with licensing. Okay, governmental agency requiring all types of registration most often have rulemaking capabilities, and rules can be promulgated that would extend the registration requirements in the future. It is very difficult to modify or stop or overturn the rulemaking process of an agency, since they are considered the experts about the persons under that jurisdiction. Once it's in place, you'll never get rid of it. That's what we're saying. Government agencies requiring registration, once they experience ownership of a list of persons, may develop goals and objectives for that list of persons, which are not in concert with the goals and objectives of the persons themselves. These suggestions might develop into future legislation, which practitioners and consumers might not want. And we can go to the full extent with this one. One of the first things Hitler did was require registration for guns. He then went and got them all. Then he had the Jews register, and we know what happened with them. So it's a little uncomfortable even to think of having to go register with the state. Why are we giving the state a list of weirdos' names? No, thank you. And that although registration might appear to be a quick and acceptable option, NHFA and NHFC wish to educate citizens in this conversation about the relationship between government and the individuals of which the government serves. The question of when to use police power to make a law is a key question in any republic or democracy and should be considered with great deliberation. The simple act of registering with an agency could possibly cause a practitioner to lose their right to the defense of lack of jurisdiction if they so wish to use it should a person be detained. When a government mandates that a particular group of persons provide them with their personal information for no constitutionally compelling state reason, some citizens react to that mandate and become fearful that the government will misuse the information. This fear could be based on experiences in the past of abuse of power. This is not an unreasonable fear given the history of the prosecution of the practice of medicine without a license. Lastly, it is extremely important that health freedom legislation is understood as an exemption to privileged licensing laws and not considered another form of regulation or credentialing. It is not a privilege to practice trades that do not pose an imminent and discernible risk of significant harm to the public. It is a right. Okay, and that was written by Diane Miller. Thank you, Diane, for that. That's excellent stuff. Let's see how much time we have. We have a few more minutes left. I wanted to say that six other states already have health freedom, and I want to give you a little report on all of them. In Minnesota, the law was enacted in 2000 and put into effect on July 1st, 2001, with an Office of Unlicensed Complementary and Alternative Healthcare Practice to investigate complaints and take action as necessary. The impact on Minnesota. Since July 1st, 2001, only 74 complaints have been received and processed, and it lists what they were for: 30 for massage body work, 15 for naturopaths, 9 for licensure with board. 13 of these complaints have been fully resolved, and 61 are pending. Okay, so they've taken a few complaints. California, they passed their bill in February of 2001, and added to the Business and Professions Code related to health. The bill would provide that a person engaging in certain medical treatments who makes specified disclosures to a client shall not be in violation of certain provisions of the Medical Practice Act unless that person engages in certain types of diagnosis, treatment, and other activities. The bill would require a person who advertises himself or herself as performing the services that are subject to those requirements to state in the advertisement that he or she is not licensed by the state as a healing arts practitioner. And that's in the Ohio original bill that we want to have passed. And the impact on California is that the climate has warmed considerably toward various forms of complementary and alternative care. There's much more information about alternative treatments for consumers to educate themselves and more acceptance of the alternatives. There's awareness of the law, and practitioners are complying with the law for the most part. People outside of the law are still being prosecuted, such as persons with foreign degrees who are practicing medicine without a license, and persons who puncture the skin. A letter has been sent to the California Department of Consumer Affairs to confirm information on any complaints of practitioners covered by the law. Idaho has a bill. We don't know the impact of that. Rhode Island, one incident occurred during 2005. A naturopath was drawing blood, was investigated, and the practice was shut down. In Louisiana, the law requires disclosure and a written acknowledgement from the consumer of the unlicensed vendor's name, business, telephone number, and related training, and the fact that he or she is not licensed, certified, or registered by the state. The impact on Louisiana is that the law is giving people more freedom to choose safe forms of health care. Health freedom activists are not aware of any incidents since the law took effect. In Oklahoma, the unlicensed practice of natural healing arts has been legal for over 100 years. A 1920 referendum repealed a three-year-old law attempting to restrict the practice of natural healing arts. Since then, scope of practice laws were created for licensed medical personnel, including medical doctors, nurses, osteopaths. Natural healing practitioners, such as acupuncturists, massage therapists, naturopaths, Native American medicine men, homeopaths, and many other diverse natural healing practitioners, have been free to practice without licensure. Schools established to train these people are licensed by the state under the private vocational school system, though the state does not regulate the academic content. State criminal and civil laws, particularly consumer laws, are believed to be adequate if death or injury were to occur. Over many decades, there have been no criminal charges or civil suits brought against any natural healing arts practitioner. The impact in Oklahoma? Practitioners of natural healing arts are considered small business people. And in a recent economic impact study, it was found that individual practitioners generated $3.8 million per annum, and schools teaching natural healing arts generated $3.5 million. That is another interesting point. In Ohio, I know that with Nature Sunshine, it is, I talked with the CEO today, it is the fourth highest state in sales in Nature Sunshine. And if you have to register each person who recommends a vitamin or an herb to someone, you're going to lose a lot of people because it's going to scare them off. So it's a state that really does take a lot of vitamins and herbs. And, you know, as a consumer of any of those products, it's very important that you let your legislator know that you want to be able to continue to consume what works for you without any registration or restriction placed on the practitioners who are doing the studying for you and passing on information to you. So I want you to be sure and get on to the legislative website. Get on to ours. It's the Ohio Sunshine Health Freedom Coalition.info. Get on there, and we've got copies of letters that we'd like you to send to your legislators. We want you to send to the Commerce and Labor Committee in the House at the moment, and we will continue this effort until we get a health freedom bill passed in Ohio. Now, Ohio is pivotal because the registration bill keeps popping up, and we keep having to kill it before we can get a good health freedom bill introduced. And there is an entity in Ohio that is trying to make an example of Ohio. It would be setting a precedent if they attached registration to a health freedom bill that then could be done in other states. we don't want to leave that kind of a track record for the rest of you guys to deal with, and we want Ohio to straighten it out and get the right health freedom bill online and done and finished this year and not have a precedent set for the rest of the country. Think about it. Who would benefit if we were restricted in that way? Who would benefit from that? Follow the money, and you'll see who it is. It has to be major pharmaceutical companies who are trying to find ways to clamp down on blabbermouths who talk about things that work in their experience and in their research. Oh, another point that I discovered is that one of the legislators yesterday seemed to think that there was no science behind any alternative and complementary care. Now, make this point to them. If there were no science behind it, why? Why do the MDs want to have control of that body of knowledge? And why do many of us teach at schools of nursing and Wright State, at some of the medical schools, people I know are teaching doctors about complementary and alternative health care? And yet, we're not allowed to openly speak about what we know. It's a strange state of affairs, but please, 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 take up the work. You know, demand your right as a consumer for your right to help people and also for your right to choose as a consumer in an open, educated market the types of modalities that you want to apply to your health and your body. And lead the way in showing the rest of the world how to inexpensively take care of yourself. Because right now, one of our biggest issues is the cost of health care. And insurance, at $800 a month per person, that's insane. What's wrong with our country? Okay, I think I've used up my time, so I'm going to sign off tonight. Please tell your friends and email me at ngingrich, G-I-N-G-E-R-I-C-H, at cinci.rr.com, and we'll be glad to get you hooked in and help you find a way to influence your legislators. But now is the time, because suddenly this is coming up before the Commerce and Labor Committee. So please do it now. Thank you all. Good night.